And I see the little yellow light just came on, which means this is Steve Van Der Ark of the Harry Potter Lexicon. Welcome to episode 18, our first ever live episode of the Harry Potter Lexicon podcast. As I said, I'm Steve Van Der Ark. I am the creator and editor-in-chief of the Harry Potter Lexicon website, and we are really excited. When I say we, that's because I am not alone. Go for it. This is my buddy Nick. Go.
Hi, I'm Nick Moline, the Lexicon's tech wizard. That's the name we came up with after our
That's
last
right.
podcast fiasco. And yeah, we're excited. It's a live podcast.
We
I've been
are.
wanting to do a live podcast for years. So I've never had a
Right.
chance to do it.
But you and I have found out over the last 2 days that doing a live web podcast is not all that easy. One thing that we discovered is that it's really hard to get your theme music on there. So we didn't have the music yet. Hopefully we'll put it on in post when we actually put this together to put up on the website. But for now, sorry about that. I could hum it, but that probably wouldn't fly. So welcome to episode 18. We are super excited. We have been working for this episode for a long time, in some ways that you'll find out soon enough. But before we go on, we always talk about what's new in the world of Harry Potter. And since our last podcast was just a few days ago, not a whole lot is new, except I will say, Nick, are you planning to go to any? I haven't asked you this. Have you planned to go to any Cursed Child book release parties?
We've really thought about it, but we haven't looked into it much. We had that conversation earlier about trying to do maybe a web one, but you're gonna be out of town, right? So that wouldn't
Well,
work.
and here's the thing, because I was researching this, because I'm going to be in Grand Rapids, Michigan, on that day. And I will be going to one of the book release parties, and I don't know which one it is. There's a couple of them in town. I've been looking up at it. And I figure I will live stream from whatever book party I go to. So it's not going to be a podcast exactly, but I'll just live stream it, and
Like
I'll
a
give you more
Periscope or
details
something?
about that coming up. And Periscope, Facebook, one of those things. And I'll just live stream when I'm there. I've already been sort of talking to some of the bookstores and things in Grand Rapids to try to see which one I'm going to be at. So that'll be fun. Kind of a good way to kind of share the moment. Because did you ever get to a book release party?
The last one. Barbara, me, and Mike actually hosted a book release party at a Books Inc. In San Francisco.
Okay,
Lovely
I think I
little
remember you said that.
bookstore with view of the Golden Gate Bridge and everything. And
Uh-huh.
we brought out podcast equipment and we did a live podcast,
That's
or
right.
we recorded a podcast live at the thing and then posted
Okay.
it later. We didn't stream
Yeah,
it.
okay. Okay, I remember you talking about that. Okay, so because my first one was Goblet of Fire, and so for me this is it's 'cause there's a lot of memories of these book release parties, and I have no idea what this one's going to be like. And one thing that struck me, I don't know, have you heard, do people realize, I mean, just the average fans, do they realize what they're getting? That this is not a novel. This is not another Harry Potter book exactly. This is a script. And I
Well, I
just
mean,
wonder what the reaction is going to be.
maybe I'm hearing a different group than you are. But frankly, I mean, it seems like everybody does get what it is because they're all kind of disappointed about it,
Okay.
right?
I'll have to see how disappointed we are after we actually read it,
Yes, but the best thing would have been if we could have got what we talked about last podcast with the whole, let's have somebody at the West End broadcast it live to theaters everywhere. I would go to that in a heartbeat.
Right. Well, and then, of course, because we are the Lexicon, then there comes the question of spoilers and things like this. So when we get the book and we read the script, how soon do we actually put all of that information onto the lexicon? Because, there has to be some sort of, I don't know, delay, I think.
Yeah,
Maybe
August
basic
1st. August
information.
1st seems like
August
a reasonable delay.
1st. Well, let's see, if we say a delay, we have the added advantage of then we have given ourselves time to actually get all the work done.
Yeah,
Because
but
that's going to
part of
be
the
a
great
fair.
thing about, the new lexicon is it's easier to make incremental updates, right? You can make little
That's
changes
true.
here and there. I mean,
Okay.
obviously, we won't have everything from the book out live on August 1st, but
No.
You
I
know,
won't even be at my computer working on it, so
yeah, but
I'll just be reading it.
I can't see why not. At least, basic things like new characters and stuff
right.
like that.
Yeah, I don't know, and I haven't read spoilers and things, so I really don't know what the plot is, but I'm sure there's going to be some big plot thing that, you know, judging by the whole keep the secrets thing, I guess that there must be secrets to be kept, and so I'm assuming there's going to be some sort of plot, something or other, some sort of, I don't know, that, you know what I'm saying. I just we'll have to see when we read it and find out, but it is going to be interesting to have that much new canon coming in. You know, we haven't had this for quite some time where we have to rush around and try to get a whole lot of new information into the lexicon. So, but now another thing, did you hear that there was a screening of a Fantastic Beasts film? I think in Chicago.
I did not see hear about that. I saw it in your What's New thing, and I had no idea.
Yeah, I think MuggleNet had a spoiler-free review. And they made some comments about they thought it was the funniest of the Harry Potter films. What else? They said the creatures were amazing, but they didn't overshadow the plot, which is really cool. Let's see what other things. They said a couple of the actors they thought did fine, but then a couple of them they thought were really outstanding, and I don't have it in front of me, so I can't remember which ones. The woman playing Queenie, I think, was one. Anyway, but so they really liked it. They gave it a good positive review, so that's exciting. That's good to know because, you know, we're kind of bound to like it either way, right? Mm-hmm.
Did they say how Redmine did? Because, you know, he's kind of hit or miss, right? I mean, for every Stephen Hawking he plays, he played a, I don't even remember the name of the character in Jupiter Ascending. But so...
Well, okay, so you're one up. You see a lot more movies than I do, so I've got nothing to go on. I've not seen him in anything, so I'll be
see Theory of Everything. It's amazing.
I haven't seen it. So, but anyway, that's really all that's new. At least for another couple of weeks, that's about all we've got. But we're going to talk a little bit about canon, like we always do. And we did have a couple of questions that have come in. One of them is wondering what our
favorite... Hold on real quick first here. Before we go, we'll go through these questions we have here. But for those of you watching, you please put in the comments any questions you have right here, and we'll try to answer them live.
Okay. Just
for people who didn't
Thank
see
you.
The
yeah, I didn't even think about that. Okay. So this question, the first one that came up, it says... what is our favorite current Harry Potter lexicon-related meme? And I assume you don't mean a meme related to the Harry Potter lexicon, because I don't think there are any. But to Harry Potter, just in general, I don't know. I have a bunch of them I don't like. They tend to be film-related, and so I kind of just kind of gloss past them, typically. That's because, I don't know, that's just me. I don't turn through Facebook and look at stuff so much. But the ones that I see, there are a couple that really drive me crazy, as you know, because we've talked about them. I mean, there are some that are so blatantly false, and people get really worked up about them, and then they post them, and then they post them again, and you just kind of want to scream and say, please, never post this ever again, kind of a thing. Like the one about the snake in the boa constrictor in book one being the same as Nagini, which is clearly false, and things like that. So I guess I would not have a favorite. I would have a least favorite.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I mean, on both Google Plus and Facebook, you know, I'd signed on to some of those, you know, Google Plus calls them communities, and Facebook, I can't remember what they call them, fan pages and stuff like that, where people just post stuff all the time.
Right.
And it was, you know, I see these things like it just dominates my Google Plus stream.
Right.
People posting pictures, mostly, like you said, most film related, drawing conclusions that either don't need to be drawn or don't make sense in the book. To be fair,
you know, if the films are the visual medium, and so if you're going to create a, if you're going to create a visual thing, which is what those internet memes are, you're probably going to be borrowing film images, which that's fine. I think that's great. But it's just when some of them quite the opposite. Some of them have struck me, and I'm just like, wow, I never even thought about that. So I mean, that sounds like I'm dumping on it. I'm not. It's just that some of them are not great, and then some of them I think are just really, really quite something. And some are just, you know, where people take film images and put them together and make, you know, pretty pictures, which is nice, but I wouldn't say I have a favorite of those.
If I were to say, you know, ones that I do like, I kind of like the ones that and people post these all the time. I like the ones that draw correlations between not just Harry Potter, but, you know, a vast variety of different books, book series, and simple imagination. You know, you see those people who just make little lovely little pieces of fan art where, you know, I saw one just the other day where, you know, there's the foreground, it was all silhouettes, but the foreground was a little girl sitting cross-legged with a book open, and then behind her was various silhouettes of different characters from different franchises. And obviously it was kind of focused on more current franchises like Hunger Games and all that stuff. But it had, you know, it also had stuff that was clearly, you know, C.S. Lewis and clearly Tolkien and stuff like that. And so, you know, and then of course Harry was there, you know, with his wand. And and I like that sort of stuff because that's how I grew up. That was my childhood was, you know, I open up a book and I'm gone. The world's gone, and I'm in that world. I think I told you before, my memories of reading as a kid is I would go out into my backyard, and I would take the lawn chairs, and I would turn them upside down, and I would sit in the middle of the lawn chair, and I would open up Voyage of the Dawn Treader, and I would imagine myself in another boat following the Dawn Treader as I go down.
Oh, that's nice.
Right,
and, you know, because books, and I'm going to say books, even though I know the film is in there too, but books touch people in ways which are just amazing, which is, I guess, part of the reason why we, you know, all these years later are still talking about these books, is because they just have so much impact. When you read a book, it just, it's different than watching a film even or watching a TV show because you are actively involved in making these mental pictures, I guess, of what's going on. So yeah, that's you're absolutely right. That's the beautiful stuff on the internet. There's plenty of stuff that's not beautiful, but some of those things are really pretty stunning.
Yeah.
So here's the next question: have we thought about sort of a Pokemon Go kind of Harry Potter game?
Yeah. You and I were talking about that just the other day. We were thinking, man, we should make a mobile app where we just go through the Lexicon Bestiary and pull out all the creatures and all the fan art of various creatures people have put up there and turn it into a Pokemon Go style game where you're trying to catch creatures.
Because I'm sure there'd be no problem with copyright on that.
Yeah, I see how, I don't know how long it would, and the bet would be, we'd have a betting pool where we'd decide how long it would be before Warner Brothers shuts
down. Crashing down. Warner Brothers and Nintendo.
Yeah, Warner Brothers, Nintendo, Niantic, all three of them. Yeah.
But don't you think that maybe, if I was the people in charge of marketing for Fantastic Beasts, one thing I would do is I would be in talks with Niantic right now saying, hey, you know, can we do one week where we put Fantastic Beasts creatures in the game or something like this? And, you know, Niantic is Google, so they've got a little money, so they can...
Actually, well, they're not anymore.
Alphabet. They're Alphabet, right?
No.
Or they're not even that?
Niantic spun out on their own.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
They're independent now.
Okay. Well, they're doing all right for themselves, apparently. So.
They started in Google.
Well,
You know, with Ingress.
Okay. Well, good. All right. Well, let's see. There's another one here. It says, what would have happened to Sirius had he not seen Peter Pettigrew / Scabbers on the front page of the newspaper? Would he have just rotted away in Azkaban, losing his wizard powers over time? He did regain energy once he saw him in revenge, right? And that is so true. There are a few moments in the series, a few of them, where some little thing, basically, if that one little thing hadn't happened, the whole series wouldn't have happened. And that's one of them. That if and think about how unusual, how unlikely. Fudge goes to Azkaban. Okay.
Right.
And he happens to leave a newspaper. Okay. Mm-hmm. He happens to leave a newspaper. And it just happens to be the newspaper that has that picture, and it just happened to be that Ron had Scabbers on his shoulder. I mean, the coincidences of all of this happening, and if that hadn't happened, yeah, what would have happened to Sirius? Nothing. He would have just, like you said, I think he would have just stayed there. He would have been in Azkaban for the rest of his life, and that would have been it. Yeah, that was because that moment precipitated everything else that happens in Book 3, Book 4, Book 5. I mean, everything happened because of that strange coincidence.
Well,
really.
In a way, it's almost kind of a, you know, overlapping theme in the series, right, is, you know, tiny, with seemingly tiny insignificant things having great overarching consequences.
That's true.
We had the conversation before. One of the, you know, the things that drew me to the series in the first place was, you know, I see these, you know, the first time I saw that tiny little detail, you know, I'm reading Book 3, and it's like, wait, I've read that name before. And it was the name from Book 1, and it was from Chapter 1 of Book 1 that was a throwaway name, but it turns out to be central to the entire series.
That's right.
You know, that's kind of one of her, that's kind of one of her little shticks, right? I mean, she just loves making things hinge off of something. So, well, think about it. The entire series hinges off of something so insignificant. I mean, how many people was he killing? The fact that she didn't have to die, but died anyway, was all the difference, right?
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, obviously, murder is not insignificant. Don't get me wrong. But the fact that it was one choice that set the entire, that made him be the chosen one.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And that brings up another thing, which I've talked about a lot. There's, it seems to me that in Rowling's version of reality, magic, good and evil, has a kind of a pull, a gravity to it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think of it that way, it's like that makes the what would be otherwise a complete coincidence more likely to happen, because the very fabric of the universe, if you will, of that magical universe, kind of pulls toward the two poles of good and evil. And so the Horcrux pulls on Harry and makes him forget to take it off when he jumps. It takes everything else off, and he leaves the Horcrux on when he goes jumping in a frozen lake. Why didn't he think to take that off? Is because I think that that influence of that dark evil affected his mind. And I think possibly the same sort of a thing, an influence the other way, affected the, you know, that whole chain of events. It's a little bit nebulous, but I love that idea of that there, it's not just coincidence, it's actually the way the world works. You know, the Potter universe works. But so really, oh, and another one, I was thinking, another one that's sort of like the same thing is when in Chamber of Secrets, they're on the road, late, heading for King's Cross, and all of a sudden, Ginny says, "Oh, I forgot my diary."
Yeah.
So they go back. So okay, and you have to, if you start figuring it out, the time scale, they literally had no time to get there. I mean, they I don't know. I know that Molly told Arthur he couldn't use the fancy gadgets, but they had to have used magic to make it from where they were in Devon to King's Cross by 11 o'clock. There had to be magic involved. But even so, they turned around, went back, and got her diary. Well, if they had not done that, none of the events of chapter of the second book would have happened. If none of the book events of the second book would have happened, you know, the chamber wouldn't have been opened. What, there would have been no hint for Voldemort that there were Horcruxes involved. I mean, there's so many things that would never have happened if they hadn't decided, even though they were like, "Hey, I'm a parent." If my kids said that, I'd say, "Well, too bad. You're going to have to get yourself another diary." I would not have gone back and gotten this diary. And, you know, so
I'll
mail
it to you.
Yeah, right. I'll send it to you by post owl. Can you imagine a post owl carrying a Horcrux? Poor thing.
Errol will bring it. That's fine.
Yeah, he's already doing well. Okay. But so that's just another example of that exact sort of thing where the universe seems to be pushing things toward certain outcomes, you know. So anyway.
No, that was a good question.
Okay.
Thank you,
so are you
Joe
scanning through the
questions?
Yeah, and hey, shout out Joe. He and I have corresponded a lot over the years. He's been a good fan of the Lexicon for many years. So I haven't even had a chance to read through here. What else we have on here? Because we've got a lot of people chiming in. This is cool.
Well, we have a question here about music in the wizarding world and beyond, from Adelaide here.
Music.
I would like to ask a question about wizarding music in and out of the Harry Potter universe.
Hold on a second before you read that. Adele just posted an interesting comment. If she posted, because I was talking about the idea of the Horcrux that he kept it on, she said, and this is a good point, I think he left the Horcrux on the ground because he didn't want to leave it lying around. Or he left it on. So that's a good point, too. Because there is a, I couldn't think of a logical reason why he would have left it on, but that is a good, that's a good logical reason. Thanks.
Yeah, but why not?
I'm sorry.
I never understood why they had to wear it in the first place. Why not stick it in Hermione's handbag and be done with it?
Right. It's almost like it was a plot point, but...
almost.
No. All right. Well, thank you. Okay, so what were you saying about music?
All right, so the question, reading of the question here is, I would like to ask a question about wizarding music in and out of the Harry Potter universe. Okay. I know they like rock and folk. What other music do they enjoy, and has it had a lot of Muggle influence over time? That is the question.
Okay. So are we sticking with books, or are we going to include the movies in here? Because there's a lot more music, identifiable music in the movies than there is in the books. Because the books, do we have...
Can you dance like a hippogriff?
Oh, I can indeed. I'm a fine dancer, thank you very much. And my wife is probably laughing her head off at the moment. but no, think about it. In the books, I think we have the Weird Sisters, which is a weird, I mean, they have like different really strange instruments involved in that band. So rock music, is it rock music? I like to think it is, because that's kind of, I get the sense of it being rock because they bring it in for the Yule Ball and for the kids and things like this, but I guess we don't know for sure, do we? Does it ever say that it's rock music?
No, just that just the instruments involved.
All right, the drummer and
there
guitar.
There certainly seems to be, you know, and I'm right at this point in my listen through of book four, you know, they're excited because they've booked the Weird Sisters for the thing, and people are giggling and talking about it throughout the halls, and you know Harry doesn't know who they are, but
You definitely feel like it's a popular rock band, yeah. So
yes,
popular
thank you.
Music.
Well, that's what I meant to say.
Mm-hmm. So, but now what else do we have here? We've got Celestina Warbeck, which just strikes me as a
singing sorceress, right?
Yeah, what do you call that? It's like an adult contemporary or a crooner or I'm not sure what do you call that sort of thing? Is it kind of like Tom Jones, Frank Sinatra style, you know, that kind of a style of music, only cheesier by far? And I realize some Frank Sinatra music is kind of cheesy, but you know what I'm saying is that, you know, it's intentionally written to be cheesy. But so how much is that? Okay, so is their music copied from Muggles? Like, do they hear Muggle music and copy it? Or is that what we're kind of assuming is going on here?
Well, I mean, I've got to assume that, you know, in any community... that's not actually the question we're saying, but sorry, Barbara put up the thing.
Barbara's our producer, by the way, just so you know. Go on.
Yeah, come wave, Barbara. No, Barbara says no.
Okay. She's producing. All right, go ahead. Yeah. What were you saying?
So,
my question was, if how much do you think that they're hearing Muggle music and copying it?
My thinking is, I mean, there's got to be some bleed, right? I mean, you have enough,
right?
You know, there's bleed. I mean, for, you know, we don't have it in music, but for example, you know, we get conversations about, you know, the West Ham soccer team, our football team.
Okay, yeah.
Right,
oh, right. Because so there's a lot of Muggle-born witches and wizards.
Yeah, okay. Muggle-born witches and wizards. So there's, and especially with the youth, right, with kids, there's going to be some bleed, right? Some kid's going to come to school with a guitar and be playing music, you know, try to bewitch their guitar to play music that they know from,
sure,
you know, from home, and then somebody right. else is going to hear that and play something in the same style, right?
Right.
And then they're
not going to show up with an iPod. We assume that, but okay.
No, they're not going to show up with an iPod. But you know, but yeah, no, there's going to be some bleed. There has
right.
to be. Now, what we know of the wizarding community and is that this bleed is very slow for a lot of things, but I've got to
yeah.
assume, right? I mean, it's slow for especially yeah. things to technology, right? But
right.
And fashion and all sorts of stuff. Everything, you know, everything kind of seems, like I said, set at least 50 years behind type thing. But I kind of imagine, at least at Hogwarts, you know, there's going to be some bleed. Somebody's going to come there who knows, you know, knows how to play
right.
a guitar, and they're going
right.
to be playing guitar from
sure, you know. Doing Stairway to Heaven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, there's going to be, and they're not, and those Muggleborns who come, they're obviously going to be playing current music. They're going to be playing things that they listened
right.
to before they came to school.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, Adele just posted. She said, "School song in book one," which has no set tune, so I guess it doesn't have a genre. Musical
sure.
saws at the Death Day party in book two. Oh, that's right. Are you? I think Adele's probably on the lexicon. There's probably an entry for music, right? She's reading down the list. Weird Sisters in book four. Appropriated Christmas carols in books five. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Celestina Warbeck in book six. Okay. Yeah, okay. I definitely see what you're... There's, everything's mirroring what's in the Muggle world. None of the, well, I don't know about the Death Day party music, but everything seems to be connected. It seems to be a, you know, sort of a reflection of, which makes sense when you look at the way that the world, this wizarding world works. Everything kind of is a mirror, not a very good mirror sometimes, sort of a funhouse mirror sometimes, but a mirror of, you know, what's going on
right.
in the Muggle world. Yeah. Okay.
Okay,
all right.
Barbara has pinned a question here. She wants. She says this is a good question. So she's. So the blue question on the top here.
I see it there. Yeah.
Yeah. She's.
Do you think Joe? Do you think Joe intentionally planned to leave some things unanswered so that we'd continue to ask questions, remain interested, passionate, etc.? We know that she is a master of disguise. Prisoner of Azkaban is the epitome of her amazing craft. I would agree with that. I think she handled plot better in that one than. Any. And if you look at books, because I love 6 and 7 as well, and oh man, the plot's great in book 5 too, but she was so busy answering questions and finishing off her very long single story in 5 and 6, or 6 and 7, that you don't get that same feeling that you get with 3, which is this just perfectly crafted plot. But do you think she left things unanswered? Start with that.
Well... Yes and no. So I don't think... I think she left things that she didn't consider were important to answer unanswered. And I think, you know, if you spend your time answering every possible question, the book's going to be really boring. You know, her goal was to tell a narrative, right?
Think about after the books, because people accused her of that, of coming back after the books and doing all these interviews and, like... answering all the questions so that we knew everything about everybody, almost like we didn't have anything left to talk about because she answered all the questions. And that was kind of a sense that we had after book 7 and then after all those interviews, the open book tour interviews, is that, well, okay, I guess there's nothing left to figure out because she kind of answered everything. And that's how we felt right after, that was about in December when that finished up, and that's kind of how fandom felt at that time. It's like, oh, okay, well, no sense writing fan fiction anymore since you've already told us how everybody ends up, and as if fan fiction doesn't go off on its own tangents, but...
Right.
But do you think that she left some things unanswered on purpose just to kind of keep us going?
I really don't. I think more. I think it's more a matter of she didn't answer questions that she didn't think
were important.
Were important, and she kind of stopped doing the tours for relatively quickly after. I mean, so she stopped mm-hmm. doing a lot of interviews, and it wasn't until Pottermore came out, and then she suddenly took an interest in Twitter that she. Mm-hmm. kind of made this big comeback.
Right, that's true. That's very true. That's exactly how it happened. Is that she and I guess I don't blame her. I mean, she kind of felt like she needed to get away from it a little bit and kind of crept back in a little bit, I guess. So,
yeah,
but now here's the thing. I mean, there are still some very, very critical things we don't know. For example, if this was a Twitter conversation I had a week or two ago, what is Madam Malkin's first name? We don't know what Madam Malkin's first name is, and you know that's pretty critical, I think. So
I agree. We have to know these.
We had a bet going whether it was going to start with the letter M. We assumed it would. So
probably. She does like alliteration.
Yeah, she does a little bit. Before we go any further into questions, and we've got some more on the side there, we are at 9 o'clock, and I would like to take a little pause from the canon stuff and talk about the lexicon. Because
is there something to talk about on the lexicon?
We have spent 4 years, you and I, working on this project, and the last 2 years we've had other people come on in and help with editing and things like this. And for the last 6 months, we have been in beta, and we have discovered when we were in beta that we are not done. And I think we finally, Nick, I'm just going to call it, we're not going to get done. And so I think we just have to throw the switch, make it live.
You have to throw the switch?
Do you know how? I mean, since you are the tech wizard, can you cast some sort of, I don't know what kind of spell you do. I know that we've been worrying about links, and let me just say this. If you're going to be, are you flipping switches over there?
I have got the switch ready over here.
You have the switch ready. Before you flip any switches, because I'm excited about this, but I just want to say this. You and I have been, one of the big things we have been talking about for ages is we have been trying to figure out what is going to happen with the old site. And by that I mean there is stuff on the old site which is not on the new site, which literally we have no way at the moment to get it onto the new site, because the new site is responsive, which means that if you look at it on your cell phone, it shows up fine. And if you have one of these big maps and charts, for example, if you have a big table, which is our day-by-day calendars, right now we don't have good ways of turning those things into responsive design elements. And so so what are we going to do about that? I mean, I guess we've been talking. Where are we coming down on that? What are we doing with the legacy information?
Well, that's exactly what we did. I've created a legacy.hp-lexicon.org, and I have put in what are called redirects for everything.
Okay, wait a minute. What is legacy.hp-lexicon.org? What is it?
That is a copy of the content of the current www.hp-lexicon.org, modified to use the new lexicon's look.
Okay.
And that
couldn't have been easy.
It wasn't. Also with with all the cross links back and forth to the new lexicon. So what's going to happen here is when I throw the switch, www.hplexicon.org takes over the content for the beta site, then. If there is a URL that somebody, comes to off of Google that was on www and we haven't got what's called a redirect for it, matching it
right
to the new URL.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about, is that there's an awful lot of links out there to the lexicon. There's 17 years worth of links coming into this site.
So what I've done is if you go to a page that would otherwise be what's called a 404 and not found page, it will check the content of legacy and redirect over to the corresponding page on legacy.hplexicon.org so that content will still be alive.
So you get to something. You don't get to nothing.
You don't get to nothing. And if you, try to access something on legacy.hplexicon.org that, does have an equivalent on the new lexicon, it will redirect you back to the real new lexicon.
Let me ask you the question: is that going to work flawlessly?
It works in my tests.
Okay.
But You know, I think when I did my little search, you had something to the tune of, I mean, there's, I can tell you right now, there's 5,449 nodes on the new lexicon. And
is there a node like as a page or
a page,
entry,
yeah,
or
individual page of various different pods. There's roughly that many HTML pages on the old lexicon, and they don't all match.
I imagine not.
So there might be pages that my little trick to have pull up the new layout doesn't work, and it shows the old layout or a version of the old layout.
Okay.
There may be pages where it redirects to the wrong thing, or it doesn't, you know, or it redirects to a 404. I have done my best to make it work properly. If anybody notices any oddities like that, but, you know, certainly, you know, tell us, use the feedback form on the lexicon and let us know, and we'll try to fix it as quickly as we can. But we're doing our absolute best to make this as seamless of a transition as possible and have all the content be there and have no dead links.
When you look at as the people who are making this, the structure of the old lexicon is so radically different than the structure of the new lexicon. They are such completely different, you know, ways of doing a website. There's no way really to make an obvious direct connection between the two. So hopefully this will work. So are we ready to hit the button?
I think so. We got some questions about the lexicon over here. Joe wants to know if the new site is built in WordPress. Yes, it is. WordPress is the core of it. That was more for the editors than for me, although it helped me too.
We will in just a minute. She wrote, "Go live, go live,
go live, go live." All right, well, fine. Yes, it is written in WordPress. I wrote up a nice little thing on the bottom of the new About page that says all the software and services we're using, internal and external, wanting to make sure everybody gets credit where credit's due, because we use a lot of open source or open services to do this. It's a good site.
It is, and just to be clear, as of now, no ads anywhere on the site.
Yeah, no ads.
So we have a support page, and so we're going to do our best. I'm going to give it my best shot to try to keep ads off the site. It doesn't cost tons of money to run, but it does cost some. Right now, it's out of pocket. So definitely hope that we can get enough people supporting that we don't have to put ads on the site, because that would be a dream. To just be able to keep it ad-free. But are we ready to go?
I think so. Shall we do it?
All right, let's hit it.
Want to count down, or am I just hitting the thing? Let me pull this up. So we can see this happen. How's that? I'm going to put up my screen share.
This is going to be cool.
Am I sharing the wrong? I am not sharing the right screen.
Okay. Yeah, don't share the wrong screen. I still see. Oh, there we go. Okay,
there
that's the lexicon. www.hb-lexicon.org.
Okay, I'm hitting the present to everybody. This is it. Everything looks the same.
This is that site. I created those graphics in like 2003.
All right. Let's make the change.
Now, is the DNS going to update that quickly?
That's part of why I'm using Cloudflare for this. Is that?
Oh, okay.
It should. Mm-hmm. So let's find out if it did. Nope, not yet.
It could be about 12 hours. So just relax, everybody. Get something to drink, because we're just going to stare at the screen until it goes live. So all of you guys I'm not worried about, because you know it's coming, and the people that we've been following. I'm just wondering what's going to happen when fans who come to the lexicon expecting to see what they've always seen, and they're going to see the new lexicon and have no idea that we're in the process of doing this, and they're going to flip right out. But we should get some interesting email at that point. But
okay. Why is this not working?
That's always good to hear. Meanwhile, I think we have a comment on the side about the music. I think 90s, so I would think that grunge alternative rock would have been a musical style influence. See, that's right. If they're right, it wouldn't be Adele. It would be, you know, the 90s era. And I wonder, because if you think about, okay, if you think about the like the Hippogriff song, was that, what style was that? Dance Like the Hippogriff.
It was kind of, why did that redirect into beta?
I'm going to scan through some questions here while he messes. So how do you check how things are not contaminated with bad magic in Hogwarts or elsewhere? Well, you know, that's a good question, but honestly, I don't think there's an easy way to tell. I mean, if you think about Dumbledore, when Dumbledore was in the cave, he could tell that there had been magic and that there had been bad magic and strong magic and all this kind of thing because he could sense it, I guess. He said something to the effect of magic leaves traces. You know, so that there is that, but, you know, you could just go with the, you know, how you know, if you can't tell where it keeps its brain kind of a thing, but then what about the Sorting Hat? You can't tell where it keeps its brain. So, I mean, even that's just kind of an old wives' tale or a rule of thumb, but how do you tell if something's contaminated with bad magic? I don't know. I guess by the behavior that it exhibits or the things that it does, but... Yeah, I guess, and maybe part of this, too, is that if it was too easy to tell, I mean, if it was like in a video game where it had a green glow around it or something, that would be kind of too obvious and too much of a giveaway if you're the, you know, if you're the librarian. Like she said about the librarian, if the librarian was a good librarian who actually knew what she was doing, it would have wrecked the whole plot because the, you know, the kids wouldn't be able to figure out anything that they needed to know. Nick's back. The lexicon is not... So, you know, it could be that kind of a thing, too, where she intentionally has kept things ambiguous as far as being able to tell if something is a powerful magic item or a bad magic item or a good magic item, because if it was too obvious, it would, you know, take away from the plot. Hey, I recognize you. Are you giving up, Tech what? Wizard?
I'm not giving up.
Never mind. The big announcement tonight is there is no lexicon. He's killed it.
Ted's dead. That's not what was supposed to happen. What's going on here?
Will you go ahead and sort that this out? I'm scanning through questions here.
Yeah, you answer questions while I figure out why I just killed the lexicon.
Joe says, do you remember the date that you launched the hp-lexicon.org site? Yeah, I do. I originally created the lexicon in 1999, and this was when we were doing in the group that was called Harry Potter for Grownups, which is it's now or became a Yahoo group, but it was e-groups or something before that. And this was where adults who were fans of Harry Potter got together and started discussing plots and things like this, which was Del just said site is up and I can see it, so just so you know, but
see it.
Yeah, that's what she says. And she's very smart. She's the one that gave us all that list of music off the top of her head. When I created the site, my original goal was that, because this is in dial-up days, and everything ran very, very slowly, and I wanted it to be fast. I wanted people to be able to just do whatever they needed to very quickly. And so I actually created everything in text, and originally, every entry was going to be no more than one line of text. Now, of course, nowadays there's no such thing as an exact one line of text. But back then, you could pretty much figure out what a line of text was because everybody's screens were the same size. You know, the biggest screens were 800 by 680. That was like, or 640. That was the biggest possible screen. Everything was also smaller. So I intentionally kept everything so every word had a definition, which was one line. And at first, I was not even putting in the references of where I found them, but eventually I realized I needed to do that. So I started adding them in parentheses, and I would add as an endnote, and I would add the abbreviation of the book and the chapter number. But, you know, like now we say Chamber of Secrets, people with uppercase C, lowercase O, uppercase S for Chamber of Secrets. I just kept it to two characters because I was trying to keep everything on one line, which is why the lexicon still uses single, you know, just the two character abbreviations for the books. But I remember that, and it came live in 2000, as in, like, put it out there, and was got onto Google and or Yahoo at the time, was the Yahoo search, and because I don't think Google even existed at that point. And within a week, it was listed as the hot site of the day on USA Today. I mean, the thing just took off instantly, which was really cool for me. I mean, I'm just some guy fiddling around on a computer in there, you know. And that's, I mean, and I still feel like that. It's just some guy fiddling around on a computer and you know, sort of enjoying the Harry Potter stuff is basically it. And so, yes, I remember very clearly when it went live. And then I would follow. Every time my whatever software I had installed would tell me when somebody linked in, I could figure out what it is like they had searched on Google to get it. And so I was doing a lot of that to try to figure out how to what things were catching people's attention, I guess is a way to put it. And then eventually I was the number one Harry Potter site on Google for a long time until until the first like official Harry Potter sites came along, but I was the number one thing. I remember that was pretty cool. So Mitzi says, share with people who have not done a live podcast event where to go on the video menu to get the Q&A, ask questions. So if you're on YouTube, you can't do that. If you are on the Hangouts, do we need to specify that, Nick? How to get to the question thing?
So the event page should have a live chat, have a chat thing there, and I believe you can just use the YouTube too. But of course, I'm not actually seeing anything, so.
No. Well, we're getting questions from some people, so. Oh, Brandy just said, it's up. We see it, too. And she says, okay, just have to say the website is beautiful. Thank you. We think so, too. I mean, I've been looking at it for...
Wish I could see it.
I've been looking at it for years, and I still think it's beautiful, but, yeah. And just recently, Nick made the change on the homepage where there's pictures and photographs and things like this, and I just think it's, like, magical. Okay? Okay. All right. Up at the top of your window, there's a little, looks like a little grid of squares, and you may have to push that to get the question answer thing to come up on the side. My wife just came in and showed me on her computer, and that's what she had to do to get the questions to show. So if you're not seeing the question stream on the right hand side of your screen, that would be what you need to click on right there. So, okay. Okay. So apparently it is up because people are saying they're seeing it. What's your thoughts over there, Nick? Are you?
It's possible. I'm having a browser DNS cache issue here.
Okay.
But I can't actually test that without closing my browser, which would have me sign out of the.
No, we don't want to do that.
Why don't I try it in another browser?
Yeah, is there another browser?
Is there another browser besides Chrome?
Okay. Joe says, by the way, Nick and Steve, great job and congratulations on the new site. I build websites and do graphics for a living, and I know how long it takes. I was an old HTML coder from back in the mid to late 90s. My man, yep, that's what we were doing back then. So, yeah, and if you look at the site and you look at what it looks like, one of the things I think has really just made the site amazing is the fact that we've been given permission by a lot of fan artists to include their artwork on the site. And so our goal is to have every single page have fan artwork. And we try not to get artwork that looks like the films. We love the films. I absolutely love the films, but we want to have a different look. We want to showcase what fans have created. And so a lot of wonderful artists have given us permission to use their artwork. And in fact, we now have an artist who is our illustrator, and she's been doing a lot of illustrations for some very, very unimportant but really interesting characters. She just did one for, was it Agatha Timms? Is that the one who bet her eel farm to Ludo Bagman in Goblet of Fire? She has this picture. Absolutely love it. It looks like a very fun lady. you know, maybe a little older, getting a little bit of the smile, the sly smile in her face. I mean, she just captures personalities. This is our staff illustrator, so this is awesome. And I should, as long as I'm talking staff, I mean, we have about 30 editors, about 12 really right now full-time editors who have just been working like crazy. They are all credited. If you go up at the top menu and you click on Lexon, you'll see a link for credits. You'll see their names there. They have been doing a spectacular job. If you think about the sheer amount of information that was on the old Lexicon, and they are the ones who have been responsible for, first of all, bringing it over, but then all of the editing, because so much of it was out of date or wasn't, I mean, we wrote this over 15 years, and our style changed, and our rules changed, and our different editors did it, and so they're trying very hard to make everything fit and everything connect, and just a spectacular staff that we have on the Lexicon. I mean, just amazing people, and so I don't even know how to thank them. They're just amazing, and Nick, of course.
But if I manage to get it so that it's up for everybody,
are you still working?
Yeah, And it's definitely not just me. I'm using external tools to test it, and I'm getting redirect loops, which I should not be getting a redirect loop.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you something. You can keep working on that. We'll be working on it all evening. So even if it isn't open for everybody, if you know, we'll get it there in the next little while as he figures all this stuff out. I will be of, you know, no help whatsoever, but I'll, you know, interrupt him now and then with comments, because that's what I do. And so I'm just looking through here again. Joe says he can't see the new page yet. One other thing, I'm going to talk about this while Nick's working. I posted something recently about time travel in the Harry Potter universe. Mm-hmm. And because I've had people asking about this, and I've had people, and I'm, okay, I say people, and now I'm going to retract that, because these are not people like fans. These are people who post things on the internet and basically say, hey, here's plot holes in the Harry Potter series, okay? And, I mean, some of them are downright, you know, they just annoy me. Some of them are like, okay, I can see where you'd see that. But there was one recently that had 10 different things, and all but one of them were not plot holes at all. Typically, they are film errors.
Right.
But the one that was brought up is the one about the Marauder's Map, and we talked about that last time, you and I, about why you see or don't see things on the Marauder's Map. But this one was about time turners, and you know, and the basic thing is, if you've got a time turner, then why don't you go back and make Sirius not die, or why don't you go back and have James and Lily not die? Why don't you just go back in time and fix all this stuff? And you know, I guess if all you've seen is the films, you might think that. And I guess, to be fair, if all you've done is read the novels, you might also have that question. Because Rowling doesn't really address that in the novels, unless you kind of read between the lines, and then if you read her interviews, and so you know that this is intentional. But you'll notice in book 5, during the Battle of the Department of Mysteries, an entire shelf of time turners crashes to the ground and is destroyed. And the reason that happens is because Rowling realized that she had created the same problem that anybody writing about time travel keeps running into, is the fact that when you introduce that into your world, you suddenly create all sorts of problems for yourself in terms of plot and things like this. And so so she realized that having time turners in her world was just going to raise all sorts of problems of people saying exactly that. Well, then just flip your time turner and go back, and Dobby's not dead. You know, and so outside of the story explanation, but with an inside of the story solution, was that she just broke all the time turners. But she actually addressed... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, why not?
You're busy working, so, I mean, it's a little heavy-handed, but it's a way to get rid of a thing. But she also addressed it more in Pottermore and wrote a whole essay about time turners. And so if you read that, you realize that she has kind of created story to explain how time can and can't be manipulated in her universe. Basically what she says is that you can't go back more than 5 hours, that even with that, the danger is very great. She has a story in there about oh, what's the name? I wrote it down. Eloise Mintumble. Eloise Mintumble.
What a name.
Got stuck for like 4 days in 1402. And as a result of her being stuck in 1402, 25 people in the present vanished because they'd never been born. And so even though they recovered her, when she came back, her body had aged those 500-600 years. And so she like died within hours at St. Mungo's. So the idea being that whatever we know about time travel in the Harry Potter universe, whatever that universe, whatever the Wizarding World knows about time travel, is it's not like it's casual. Like, oh, yeah, we just go around jumping around through time all the time. In fact, it's very dangerous. It's not something you do very quickly. In fact, again, to answer the obvious question of, okay, so it's that dangerous, it's that bad, so they give it to a third-year student so she can do a couple extra classes. And what Rowling says is that, you know, and you can just tell this is like to answer that question before it gets asked, that nowadays time turners are only used for simple time management things because they are so dangerous you can't use them for bigger things. Okay, so that's what it actually says on Pottermore, which completely negates the whole plot hole in the Harry Potter series comment. But it does bring up that whole question, that whole problem of, you know, a time turner has spells in it. Like you just said, that when we were talking about this, Nick, every time you flip it, it goes back an hour. What if you go back six? If the safest you can do is 5 hours, did you just kill somebody? You know, I mean, what's going to happen? So I think, you know, destroying the entire collection of time turners is probably the best way to do it.
I fixed it.
Ah, we are live. We are live. Oh, I love it. There's Agatha Chubb. That's who it is. No, no, Agatha Chubb is... No, she's... That's a different one. Sorry. I'm getting all excited. But... oh, yes, that's it. There we go. And by the way, see that illustration of the castle? You've got to take a look at that one. It's when you get to the site, take a look at that. If you click on it, you'll actually go to a page where you see a larger version of it. All of these artists that have given us permission to use their work, if you click on their work, it goes to a page for that particular piece of artwork. And then if you click on their name, you'll go to a page for that artist, and you'll see thumbnails. Oh, thank you. There you go. And if you click on there, you'll see thumbnails of the artwork that we have in our collection by that particular artist. And if you click on the one again, the Hogwarts one, just, oh, it's an amazing, amazing. That's something else. That's so much fun. See, I love that sort of a thing, is that kind of artwork. And you can say, is it canon? Well, no fan artwork is canon. That's not the point. The point is, isn't this beautiful stuff? I mean, artists, our fan artists are amazing.
They really are. There's a lot of cool stuff on here.
Is it possible to just go back? Oh, yeah, I guess you can go up to the top and click on the... Because where it says Harry... See, again, notice I tried not to fill it up with a whole bunch of navigation stuff. So there we go. Another beautiful image there. Hermione Found's Spew. So, oh, yeah. Oh, it's nice to see. So this is live now, huh? I'll wait for the complaining emails to come in.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to send a complaining email, you just click up here and go to feedback.
Go to feedback right there, and you can send me an email telling me how terrible it all is.
You can start typing,
this site sucks.
Go back to the 1999 version, please.
Oh. I've been trying to find a picture of the 1999 version because it actually, I should try to recreate it. It wasn't all that complicated. It was all text. But did you just send that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, say, oh my goodness. Oh, and by the way, okay, take us to a page. Take us to find. So go to the Explore bar up at the top there, and take us to a page.
Okay, where do you want
to
go?
It doesn't matter because it's on all of them. But don't get one of the do Dumbledore because it takes forever to scroll to the bottom. Okay, you're going to go to a page. Okay, Chamber of Secrets, do chapter 8 or 7 or one of the chapters. Okay. So now you're at this page. Now scroll to the bottom. And down at the very bottom, you see where it says pensive? That is where you can leave your feedback. and tell us things that are you know, interesting things that we're gonna that we can add to the page. If there's things that you think of that we didn't include, put that in there. We are going to be monitoring all the pensives, and we are going to be taking that information and integrating it into the page. If people have additional connections, anything that they want to make, I really, really hope that that gets lively. And also, I don't see it on this particular page, but if you go to one of the pages that has commentary by our editors, because we have editor commentary down there too quite often, and the editors will write commentary about things which are fan theories, which are their own their own take on things. And so if you read those kinds of and etymologies, you'll see the name sources. There's some notes. And that's MLW means that's Michelle Worling is the one who wrote that. All of our editors have the ability to add commentary, and we also, and I don't see it on this one, will have sometimes say from the web, and we will have connections to websites, to the Harry Potter Wiki, which is another good source of information, but they have a different definition of canon, which is why we're kind of like a good companion site for them. You know, they have one way of looking at canon, we have another way, so you can kind of get both. So we're going to be linking to a lot of things like this just so that you can use a lexicon page almost as sort of a, I don't know, as sort of a home base when you're researching something and things like that.
Who wrote this garbage? That's exciting.
I wouldn't have published it, but it's the guy who does the web, and I didn't want to make him feel bad, so I left it there. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know what? We have been going for an hour, believe it or not.
Have we really?
It has. We still have questions to answer. We will be writing those down. We will be putting our next podcast together. We'll probably do another one in another few days or so. I know that Nick has to actually try to get some sleep because
I do.
You were up like all night last night. We're working on this, weren't you?
Yeah, it was about
was it about 4 o'clock in the morning that you finally texted me and said
Barbara was very upset with me.
Yeah, my wife was curious too. What I was doing up until 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. and then I got up at 6:45 to go to work. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. So that just turned your hair green. I don't know if you knew that, but
yeah, something's happened to my hair.
Well, okay. I think what we're going to do, we are going to wrap it up. That is going to do it for this first of our video podcasts. And this is so much fun, and I love the live feedback that comes on doing something like this. I think we're going to have to do another one of these. Maybe after Cursed Child, we'll do another one where we'll talk about...
Just talk about the Cursed Child.
When we actually have something to say.
Yes.
And we'll talk about that one. Maybe we'll do another video podcast at that time. We'll see if we can get our theme music on there. That would be awesome. I do want to say thank you to Nick. I know that, Nick, you have been putting in an amazing amount of work on this, and as I kind of said in jest, your boss does expect you to actually do, you know, work, not lexicon work, when you are at work, which is, you know, only fair. It's easy for me to say. I'm a teacher. I don't, you know, I'm not teaching in the summer, so I have a little bit extra time. But so, Nick, what are you going to be up to for the next couple of days before we get to do this again, and where can people get a hold of you?
Well, if there are any bugs or problems, I'll probably be squashing those. But otherwise, I'm going to catch up on some sleep and have a weekend of just, you know, doing not serious work. But then we have to get back and, you know, we're not done. You know, we've reached a point that we believe that we're ready to go live, and we push it live.
Yep.
But there is a lot more to do. I mean, we talked last podcast about the full currency conversion page where people can convert currencies.
Right. Mm-hmm.
By the way, I was way off. There's 175 currencies in the system right now.
On the system? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's really amazing. That is really cool.
Yeah.
So
I said, oh, I bet there's 90. But then I was like, oh, I wonder how much there is. 175.
Well, I think we have like 70 or 80 things on our official to-do list that you and I work from. And
yeah.
I think as of this, we will have squashed about 7 or 8 more done, the ones that have to be done now.
Yeah.
Then we'll only have about another 50 things on the list. So.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I'm going to take it a little easy and focus mostly on fixing problems, if there are problems, now that it's live.
No, there won't be any problems. Nah, yeah. it's gonna be perfect. It's gonna
not
be
like
perfect.
There wasn't problems when I tried to push it live in real time here.
Right. Yeah. Well, but, and then I'll spend the time writing nice emails to people who are lost and trying to figure out what's going on. So.
Yeah. And then after that, I'm going to we'll get some rest, and then we'll start hammering the new stuff. We've got, you know, we want to get the new timeline system ready to go.
Oh, that's the big one, yes. I really, really want to get the timeline back up. We have little timelines on every page, which are automatically generated, and the system is designed to be able to generate an actual full timeline. We have a lot of metadata in there, which is allowing us to do that, where we even stuff that we don't have actual dates for, we can put in enough information that the system will be able to put it on a timeline for us. But, yeah, if you can see the timeline at the bottom of the page there, that's automatically generated based on what the events are that relate to the entry that you're talking about. Yeah. We want to have all of those be able to be in a timeline form that you can actually just kind of scroll through the timeline and find specific events and things like this. So that is a big one. That's going to be an exciting thing when that gets ready to go. I mean, the data is there. We just have to get it working. So okay. Well, and how can people get a hold of you? It's right on the screen there, but.
Yeah, how can they get a hold
apparently
of me?
Somebody wants to get a hold of you. I just heard the bling.
Yeah, that's Barbara sending me a message saying...
saying get off? Time to
go
to bed?
No, she said you should have a live podcast to go over the new Lexus. That's what we were doing.
Yeah, well, what about... that's our producer hollering from the distance there telling us that we could do a separate one, just touring the new Lexicon. That would be cool. That would be fun to do. And do watch for if I'm going to do the live stream from the book release party.
I look forward to that.
Okay, Nick, your email address, I can see it on the screen there,
Nick at hp-lexicon.org. You can find me on Twitter as well as at Nick Moline, but email me.
Surprisingly,
I want to know.
Yeah. Mine is steve at hp-lexicon.org. And get on the site. Look around, send feedback. If you have, make comments. Enjoy the site, truly. And just appreciate the talent and the creativity of those artists who have let us use their artwork. I'm just amazed when I look at those pages, all the different styles and all the different kind of visions for the Harry Potter series, and that's what I love about it. I love the fact that this series, if you we're not stuck with just the film version. We can use our own imaginations of how we think it would look, and that's why I like all these different kind of visions of what these characters might look like and what the circumstances might look like. And so, that's about it. We are now no longer at beta. We are at www.hp-lexicon.org, and that about wraps us up. So this is Steve Vander Ark and
Nick Moline
saying thanks for listening.
Or watching.
There you go.
And thanks for giving the live feedback, too. I love that.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes, definitely. And we'll go through it there and see if there's anything that we missed. All right. All right. Thanks for listening and watching.
Bye.
Take care.
All right. Hit the end broadcast.